Well, thank you guys all for coming today. I know that it takes a lot of courage to come and listen to a dude talk about pornography. So I commend you all for joining us today. I would like to just start off with some prayer. So Jesus, we just come before you today and are so grateful that we get to live a life that is in glory to you. Jesus, I pray that you would help us in our journey, and that you would lead us just out of enslavement to things that just crush our spirits and rob us of the life that you came to give us. And I'm just so grateful for each person here today. I pray that just the Spirit would be moving in this room, God, and I pray that walls that have been built or that we have built around our hearts would just come crumbling down, God. And I know that that is something that is scary. And I just ask you to be the provider of courage that we would need to allow that to take place, God. And just that we would step into the life that is truly life. And I pray that you would just use me and that your Spirit would just inhabit the words that I say, and that this would be something that is done in your strength and not my own. And I just pray all these things in the incredible name of Jesus. Amen. So, as you might have guessed, what we are talking about today can be very personal. So I might, you know, say some things like pornography and masturbation. And so, you know, let's just, I guess, be adults like we all are. just about just that the topic that we're talking about. I wanted to explain the title just briefly. It's Freedom for a Change. And it has two meanings. One is that we would actually find freedom from an addiction to pornography and masturbation. And just, I looked at pornography for years and years and years and literally came to this place where I thought, you know what? This will always be a part of my life. Maybe I'll be able to kind of like manage it and maybe like spread it out to every couple months or something like that, but I'll never really experience true freedom and go years without looking at pornography. I almost accepted the reality that that was not possible. And so I'm just here to encourage you guys to not fall into that mentality. And I believe in freedom for a change. And then the second reason is when we are set free, we are allowed to enter into this world and create change and set others free. And so we're set free for a change in this world. And not only do we have to look at sexual violence around the world in terms of like, oh man, okay, if our sexual decisions do cause sexual exploitation around the world, like, man, like, then it's our fault. Like, we don't have to just stay there, but we can actually move toward like us actually being the solution. And as we are set free and we begin to treat women with respect more and more, as we don't just objectify them and use them to meet, you know, this sexual need that we think that we have, we get to then begin to just lavish, you know, the love of Jesus onto this world. And we also get to mentor other men and help them find liberation. So we can actually become the solution to create sustainable change when it comes to the injustice of rape for profit in the world. So those are the two meanings of the title. I could begin kind of with this big picture, you know, just throw out a bunch of statistics like just the sale of human beings is a $32 billion industry globally. And it's actually bigger. It's more profitable than Starbucks, Google, and Nike combined. It's the second, human beings are the second most illegally traded thing in the world. Right behind the trafficking of drugs. And it actually surpassed weapons just in the past couple years, and they predict that it will surpass drugs in the next couple years, and will become, human beings will become the number one illegally traded thing in the world. And one of the reasons for that, they're beginning to understand just that human beings can be so much more profitable than something like a drug or a weapon that you can only sell once, because a human being, a girl, you can, you know, people are selling them over and over again, sometimes a dozen times a day for years on end. And so it's not just, you know, one transaction, but it's hundreds sometimes. There are an estimated 800,000 people who are trafficked across international borders every year. That does not include the millions that are trafficked within their own country. They estimate that about 17,500 people are brought into the U.S. each year, forcibly in the form of trafficking. And 1% of victims of human trafficking in the world are rescued at this point, right now. But I don't just want to overwhelm you with statistics. That's not at all my goal. Maybe just get a little glimpse as far as a little bit of the condition of the world. But I do want to move, not at all just stay there and talk about these abstract concepts that are global, but more focus on our hearts, you know, and bring it much more closer to home. And my goal today is just to encourage you guys and to give you just a great sense of hope. And to leave you even joyful, you know, that there is hope on the horizon and that you can totally experience freedom. And so, again, I'm just totally encouraged that you guys chose to come here today. I just think that shows a lot about you guys. And I don't think that there's anything that you need to be ashamed of or embarrassed of. Just you guys having the courage to come into this room already shows that you are in a place where you desire freedom. And so how cool is that? Just that we can all have that in common. Man, we want freedom from this. We don't want to be stuck in this anymore. So I'll just explain a little bit about my story. I first looked at porn when I was 11 years old. Just some kids in the neighborhood had a magazine and showed me. I just had never really comprehended the idea of a naked woman before. And it just kind of blew me away. I grew up, my dad was a pastor when I was really young. He actually got really burned out with ministry when I was about 3 into 4, and ended up leaving his position as the associate pastor of a church. He split off from this church and planted a church, but it kind of just fizzled out. And at that point, he kind of gave up the ministry. He continued going to church and calling himself a Christian. But a lot of the memories that I have of my dad, at least from childhood, was just kind of him watching a lot of TV, sitting on the couch. He was physically present, but very much kind of emotionally absent. And I kind of always just felt like a burden to him, and it transferred over into a lot of my interactions with men. I just kind of always felt like men really didn't want to spend time with me. I wasn't really desired by them. So I found myself like, well, when I was really young, I just had tons of energy. I was kind of a troublemaker. Somehow, I didn't know it was possible until I did it. I kind of like failed kindergarten, and they held me back and put me into this thing called success. You know, they're like, yeah, oh sweet, I'm not alone. Cool. And I just had tons of energy. My dad said I had this characteristic that I was like God, in that I was everywhere all the time, like into everything, you know. And so my parents kind of like encouraged me, I guess, to go to a bunch of different church youth groups throughout the week. So I find myself all through middle school, all through high school, going to like 4 different church youth groups every single week, just so that I, you know, wouldn't get into trouble. But yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why I really loved going, because there were a bunch of girls, you know, that I could flirt with pretty much. And so even though I called myself a Christian, I didn't really know kind of what that meant. When I was 18, something like radically happened in my life where some people from another religion started asking me all these questions about what I believed and why I believed it. And I had answers for them. I was like, yeah, you know, of course, like Jesus is God. But I didn't really know like where in the Bible it said that. I didn't really have reasons for believing the things that I said that I believed. Obviously not that there weren't reasons out there. I just didn't know them. Yeah. Kind of everyone that I knew that grew up in church, we just all believed the same thing. And so I never really had a reason to really question that. And yeah, a lot of times I was just at church to kind of flirt with the girls and then fell asleep like during the sermon, you know. And so just didn't really like learn a whole lot about the very beliefs that I was subscribing myself to. In terms of just like pornography and masturbation, it was a problem. You know, it started middle school, high school, for years and years. Into high school, one of these youth groups that I was going to, they started this group, a couple older dudes, and we called it the Kelly Club, okay? And it was just a group that would help kind of hold each of us accountable to looking at pornography and masturbating. And we called it the Kelly Club because it was something that we could talk about, and it was like a code word. So if we were around other people, we'd be like, hey, how's Kelly doing? You know, is she all right? Or we'd be like, dude, Kelly's great. And like, Kelly's not too good, you know? And that's like a sign of like, I'm struggling a lot, I need help. So that was so that we could talk about it and not just have to be alone. It's like our code word, you know? And we did all kinds of crazy stuff. Like our initiation into the Kelly Club was you just had to take a 30-second freezing cold shower. And so we just like would throw someone in the bathroom and like make them jump in the shower in the freezing cold water. And if you like messed up, if you looked at porn, then we'd like, as a group, we'd get to like conspire together about how we would punish you. So I remember one time this guy, he looked at porn, and we were like, all right, we need a big cup and we're going to fill it with ice. And you're going to need to pour that ice down like the front of your whitey tighties. And just like for 30 seconds, just like have them all up in there. So that was one of the forms of our brutal retaliation against the rebellion of pornography. But here's the thing. So it lasted the summer. It was about 2.5 months. At the end of the summer, when the group kind of broke up and we went back to school and two of them were in college, I actually, that week, I looked at like more porn than I ever had before. I just like felt kind of like parched in a weird way. Like I felt like I was just like holding myself back, but I was like famished, and I just totally indulged like more than I ever had before. It was really strange to me. Because I was just like white knuckling, and I was just like trying in my hardest, my best, in my own strength not to do it. And then with the help of other people, my heart hadn't been changed. And it just left me like crazy discouraged, that it would just push me like right back into it more than ever. And I just came to this breaking point, which I'll talk about a little later. But I want to get a little more broad just in terms of men. This isn't something, you know, this topic isn't something that's really readily talked about. One of the reasons might be because that study shows that 80% of men in the church this week will look at pornography or admitted to looking at pornography. And so I think it's very possible and realistic. Maybe, you know, some of you guys as pastors in this room like struggle with pornography. And so to be someone who's out talking to another group of people about something that you're struggling with isn't like, you know, something that's ideal. And so maybe you feel ashamed or convicted, and so you don't want to try to help set someone else free that you haven't found freedom in yet, which I mean, it's a lie. It's totally okay and acceptable to like express vulnerability. You know, I think that's a sign of incredible strength. As a pastor, and we don't have to put these walls up and barriers and make people believe like we never struggle with anything, you know, as a leader in the church. And so, yeah, how much more powerful would it be to say, hey, I struggle with this, and let's encourage each other and work through this together and really find out truth and freedom together. But yeah, and then as far as 48%, that's masturbation, you know, within the week. And the 98% is in a year. This other study estimated that 98% of men in a year will look at pornography. So just as far as like what I said before about my mentality of thinking it would never be possible to find freedom, just going back to this kind of hopeless place of desperation that I had found myself, I remember like the exact day. It was February 4th, 4 years ago. Sorry, it was February 5th, 4 years ago. And I was sitting at my kitchen table, and I was just kind of miserable and hopeless. And I thought, man, this is just something that like is going to cause consistent misery, where I'll even like if I go longer and longer, I'll just like continue to fail even worse, you know, worse and worse. And I was like, this sucks. Like, what is the solution? Do I do it every like week so it's not that bad, or do I try to go long and then do it a lot? Like, this is horrible. And I remember just crying out to Jesus and just being on my face and like asking him for help and just saying, Jesus, I can't do this alone, you know, and I can't even do it with a group of other people. Like, I don't know what to do. And I literally remember feeling this physical thing inside of my chest, where the best way I can describe it is that something was like connected to my heart and it just broke off. And I just like had the sense that it was just floating away. It was really crazy. And I was like, Like, oh, what was that? And I just believe that Jesus, like, supernaturally brought healing to my heart in terms of this addiction that I had to pornography and masturbation. And in the last, you know, over 4 years, I haven't masturbated once. Just complete liberation. I have struggled with pornography, I think, 3 different times where I did, I broke down and looked at it 3 different nights in the last 4 years. But it was just like a one-night thing. One time was actually the end of last summer. I'd been in Africa like for 2.5 months, and it was just really difficult coming back into the U.S., and that was one of the ways that I tried to, I don't know, escape kind of the pressure that I was feeling. And the next day, I mean, that very night, actually, but into the next day, I asked for forgiveness, and Jesus' grace came with a vengeance in a beautiful way. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I believe that I have been set free from pornography after that third failure. But, I mean, even if I failed again, you know, it's like His grace is sufficient for me and for you. And it's, you know, yeah, God's love is not conditional by any means. You know, it's not based on how well we perform for Him. But He just desires to see us set free as His children that He loves like crazy. And so it's not that we have to perform for Him in order to get something from Him or be worthy of His love or make Him proud of us. Like, He loves us like crazy. There's nothing that we can do or not do to make God love us any more than He already does. So us finding freedom or us failing is not, it's not, you know, whether we are loved by God or not. It's just that He loves us so much, He desires to see us free and living the life that He created us to live. Okay, before I go kind of into these three kind of main words and these quotes that make these 3 points, I just want to kind of throw this abstract concept out there and stretch it a little bit and just give you guys something to kind of think about. You know, back the Beatitudes, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus, He equated lust with adultery at that time. And He kind of raises the bar. You know, you've heard it said, you've heard it taught, the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments, it says, do not commit adultery. So He says, you've heard it taught, do not commit adultery. But I tell you, if you look at a woman lustfully, it's the exact same as committing adultery. And at the time in that culture, adultery was kind of like the worst imaginable sexual sin, you know, that you could commit. You would literally be, in some cases, many cases, stoned to death, especially if you were a woman, in the streets if you committed adultery. It was kind of this unthinkable thing that you would never do. And he equates looking at a woman lustfully as this thing that's worthy of a punishment of death. And so bringing it kind of culturally to today, adultery, sadly, is not really seen as, in many people's eyes, that big of a deal. It's almost kind of common. It's like, yeah, maybe even the majority of men just think that that's okay to commit adultery. And so I think that the point that Jesus is making or was making is kind of lost. It's lost a lot of its power. And so one way that really hits home for me would be to kind of change what Jesus said a little bit and say, hey, to look at a woman lustfully is the same as like raping a teenage girl. You know, or it's the same as traveling to Thailand, which 82% of men who travel internationally to Thailand participate in the sex trade of girls prostituting themselves there in Thailand. It's the kind of sex trafficking capital of the world. And so I believe that the point that Jesus is making, if he said it today, would be, hey, to look at a woman lustfully is the same as like coercing her and forcing her into a brothel and raping her repeatedly. It's kind of like, whoa, this crazy, unimaginable thing that's like the worst case that you would never want to do, you know? Just this horrible thing. Okay, so just having said that, I want to make a couple points and I'll read you some quotes which you have on the sheet in front of you. And we'll try to come back to that a little bit. But this first point is control. Pornography gives us a false sense of control, a false sense of security. There's this really powerful quote from C.S. Lewis, and this isn't word for word what he said, because he is brilliant, and I didn't understand about half the words that he said, and so I changed them by using a thesaurus to find other words that I understood. That meant it's almost the same thing, so we'll just read through this. For me, the real evil of porn would be that it leads the individual into a prison of himself with a harem of imaginary brides. This harem works against him ever getting out and truly uniting with a real woman. For the harem is always accessible, always compliant, and calls for no sacrifices or adjustments. They are endowed with erotic and psychological attraction that no woman can rival. Among those shadowy brides, he is always adored and always the perfect lover. No demand is made on his selfishness or mortification ever imposed on his vanity. In the end, they merely become the medium through which he increasingly adores himself. So as men are looking at pornography, it's a way that they can actually just love themselves and find women who just cater to their needs. So that last line is really powerful. In the end, they become merely the medium through which he increasingly adores himself. And that is images on a screen of women. So, you know, it's us being in this control. Maybe we do, like I did at the end of last summer, just kind of feel insecure, kind of feel this pressure. They feel inadequate, you know, men, us. And so we go to this sense of control. This woman on a screen, we know this woman will make me feel a certain way for this certain period of time. And it's one thing that we can control and grasp in that moment. And so we go to it to try to escape kind of the discomfort or whatever we might be feeling in our lives, the inadequacies, the deficiencies we might feel other people are putting as pressure onto us or pressures that we're putting onto ourselves. And we just see it as this break. But here's one of the things that really hit me when I was at this place where I was kind of coming to the end of just, I can't wrestle with this anymore on my own. I need help outside of myself. And I remember I was literally in the bathroom about to masturbate. I just looked at pornography, and I thought to myself, I just read this definition of love, and it said love is a self-sacrifice for someone else's benefit, right? And so I'm sitting there, and I'm like, David, what are you sacrificing right now? And in what way is someone else benefiting from that sacrifice? And I was like, okay, I can't think of one way right now in this moment of looking at pornography and then going to masturbate that I'm really sacrificing anything. And I can't think of a way that anyone's really benefiting. And I know, like, I'd heard a justification from another dude who was like, you know, if I don't masturbate, like, I'm a wreck. I'm really anxious and, like, stress out, and so I'm doing a favor to other people by math. Like, you want me to do this because I would be miserable to you, you know, like, because I'd be this stressed out wreck and you would not want to be around me. And so he kind of used that as the justification of, like, why it was okay for him to do that. But I didn't see any validity in that. And so I just thought, no, in no way is this an action of love, right? And in no way am I sacrificing anything. If anything, I'm actually sacrificing these girls on the screen, these girls who are putting themselves through this, so that I can benefit. I would say, if anything, this is actually an act of hatred in this world, where I am hating myself and I'm hating these girls and I'm hating this world by just using it as a consumer to consume this pleasure. And I would also say that it just degrades a view in our hearts as men of women in general. When we look at an image of a woman on a screen, we think, your sole purpose in existence right now on this screen is to make me happy and to provide me with this pleasure. Like, that's the only reason why you exist. I want nothing more to do with you than to consume this feeling, right? And what if, as we live our lives, you know, another justification is like, hey, I do that in private, like it's not that big of a deal. It doesn't really affect anything that I do throughout the day. But what if looking at pornography and getting that feeling toward that image transfers over into every interaction that we have with women, you know, to some level or another? And we begin to wonder, what if this girl or this woman also just exists to make me happy and to provide me with this pleasure? And then we begin to just use them in the same way to try to get this false sense of control and security by exploiting them, essentially. Just using them to provide our needs, sacrificing them to make us feel happy or pleasure or joy, which is, again, an act of hatred, essentially, the opposite of an act of love. And just objectifying to women. Okay, so that's the first point, control. The next point is that it's truly insatiable. And there's a quote from Ted Bundy. You guys know who Ted Bundy is?
Yeah.
The guy who was actually on the execution, you know, death row for raping and murdering, I think, like almost a dozen women or more. I can't remember exactly how many. Many, yeah. One is too much. The number's not important. But he just says, I've lived in prison a long time, and I've met a lot of men who are motivated to commit violence, just like me. Without exception, every one of them was deeply involved in pornography, without question, deeply influenced and consumed by an addiction to pornography. There is no question about it. The FBI's own study on serial homicide shows that the most common interest among serial killers is pornography. So the most common interest among serial killers is pornography. So Ted Bundy, yeah, he believes that pornography is damaging and insatiable, even as he's on death row for committing many acts of violence against women sexually and then ultimately murdering them. Okay, I want to explain this concept that I learned in high school. I took this advanced placement class. It was an economics class, microeconomics. And I wasn't sure like what I would study in college. I was a senior, and so my brother was like, he really loved like business and economics. He's like, you should take this class. It was my favorite. And I'm like, I'm a lot different from my brother, but I was like, hey, I'll take his advice and see how I like it. I didn't like it so much. I'm not that into business. Nothing against those who are. But I really enjoyed this project that we did on this concept called diminishing marginal utility. And this concept was brought to life through this assignment that we had to bring in more of like an item that is maybe one of our like favorite foods that we enjoy eating, more than we could consume in one sitting. And so I'm like, okay, a lot of people are bringing in like candy and like unhealthy things. I want to at least bring in something healthy because I know we're going to be eating a ton of it, right? So I was like, I'm going to bring in bananas. So I bring in 12 bananas, and we sit down, and we have 30 minutes to consume one banana or one whatever it is that you brought in, and then you write down how happy you were, how satisfied you were from consuming that one thing. So we're like, sweet. I'm like, dude, I'm like a 12. This banana is awesome, you know. And then I'm like, 2, 3, 4, 5. I get up to 11, and I'm like down to like -1. I'm like eating my 12. I'm like, this is miserable, you know. Like, I think I'm going toward the -2. And so it was just like this point to say, hey, the more you consume of one thing that gives you pleasure, that makes you happy, you're actually going to get less and less satisfied. And maybe even not satisfied, actually having satisfaction and pleasure taken from you as a result of doing the same thing that once gave you joy and made you happy or satisfied your need. And I believe that all sins have this characteristic. All sins, ultimately, they have this illusion of giving you this temporary, just fickle pleasure that has no real sustainability or no worth, and actually leaves you more miserable as a result. And kind of like, you know, marijuana, they call it the gateway drug because they believe as you do marijuana more and more, you actually get less and less satisfied with it. And so you have to move into more extreme forms of drug use to get the same level of, you know, being high as you did before. That all just falls under this category of diminishing marginal utility. And sometimes it leads to worse things. So I believe that's the point that Ted Bundy is making. You know, if you are trying to find this fulfillment and satisfaction from pornography, and that's this kind of sole source of meeting this pleasure, you're going to have to do more and more extreme things to get the same level that you did of joy or pleasure that you did. And so that's one of the reasons why he's linking kind of murder, acts of violence, serial killers type of things to pornography and how that can lead toward acts of violence. Essentially, like we established with C.S. Lewis, essentially these are all acts of hatred toward the world. And so this is just kind of progression of, you know, what pornography can, I'm not saying it does by any means in every case, but can lead people to as far as acts of violence. Let's see. I would just say that it's so beautiful that in the spiritual realm, things like reading scripture and prayer don't have that characteristic. Like, sure, it's awesome to spend hours and hours reading scripture, but I just remember I was going through a really dry season about a month ago where I just didn't feel Jesus for about a week. And all of a sudden, I open up my Bible and I read one verse, you know, and the presence of God just came and, like, met me there. Like, in my brokenness, in my dryness. And it just took one verse and, like, a whisper from Jesus to give me this amazing amount of, like, fulfillment and meaning and purpose and joy. And just allowed me to feel the love of a father, you know, in one verse. It didn't take me having to read for hours and hours to get this, you know, the same level of fulfillment that I had a week before. And so I just think that's beautiful. You know, that's something like spending time with Jesus. It doesn't have the characteristic of diminishing marginal utility. And I thank him for that. okay, let's jump in to this last point. This one's kind of intense. So us participating in something like pornography, looking at pornography, Mark Driscoll actually believes that it perpetuates and fuels the global sex trade. Which is, you know, the second most legally traded thing in the world, possibly becoming the first in the near future. And so let's look at this quote from Mark Driscoll, the pastor of Mars Hill. He says, "More money is spent on porn than on pro basketball, baseball, and football combined. So you've got this growing and unhealthy, extremely addictive, and highly competitive environment with the internet. And there's a limited number of women who are willing to enter into this lifestyle. So that feeds the global sex trafficking trade." So because there are a limited number of girls who are willing to allow themselves to be treated the way that many girls are, in a negative way in pornography, videos and images, and because there is, you know, a growing level of demand from men to look at that, it is fueling this kind of growth in this demand for more and more pornography, which means that potentially people who are making money on the industry of pornography would be trying to get more girls into it so they can make more and more money by making more and more videos and images. And so indirectly, potentially, us consuming pornography, looking at pornography, could be bringing other girls in through the form of trafficking into a form of sexual violence. And, okay, here's another kind of, someone could easily say, like, David, like, okay, sure, I look at pornography, but I don't spend any money. Like, I'm just clicking on stuff. There's so much porn that's just free. Like, I'm not really adding any money to this thing. And so I'm not really contributing. I just, like, I look at porn, I masturbate. Like, it's not a big deal. But, I mean, the way that the markets are functioning now, if you look at YouTube, just by you clicking on something, people actually make money from that click. Mm-hmm. And so if you put a YouTube video on the internet and 10,000 people watch it, you actually make money just from someone watching that image. A friend of mine just got over $1,000 check from like 60,000 views that he had on, you know, YouTube. So no one actually spent money on anything, but just from them clicking it, he was able to make money because marketers, companies, businesses, they put tons of money into advertisements on those pornography pages. And so just by you going to that page, there's a lot of money going into those websites, even though they're offered for free, because they obviously hope that you'll then buy something, you know, obviously as an advertisement. So they're willing to pour money into that. And so when there is more and more of a demand of more and more men going to these sites, even if they're free, still more money is being exchanged and fueling pornography and the abuse of women. Another thing is, like, you may think that it's kind of harmless, but I've heard stories of women. I haven't been personally on the scene of a porn shoot, but I've just heard stories of women, like, in between shots, like, curled up in the corner and just weeping. And they may be, like, in a really tight financial place, and you know, someone will call them up and say, hey, I'll give you $1,000 to come and just make this 5-minute video. And they're like, man, like, okay, should I go through this incredible, like, excruciating, you know, pain and abuse to be able to, like, pay, you know, my electric bill? Or should maybe my kids not be able to eat, like, a good meal this week and me not do that? And so they, because of circumstances, are forced to enter into this. And then on top of it, the men are like, hey, you know what? I'm actually not going to pay you if you don't pretend like you really, really enjoy this. And like that last shot, you made that face and that wasn't good, so we're going to redo it. And man. So, yeah, just this, man, this idea that we are actually perpetuating the global sex trade with our sexual decisions. This man named Tony Anderson says, you know, but by the grace of God, we can become the solution to bring healing to this form of injustice and abuse in the world. So even if you were, you know, this concept that I had addressed, even if we were to bring every girl in every brothel in the world out, like, there is still this void that's actually being created. And until the hearts of men are changed, this injustice will never sustainably be eradicated. And so we are not, you know, just the problem, but we are the solution to this injustice. And our hearts being changed and us crying out to Jesus and finding liberation in Him, who is the only source of true freedom, is actually the solution to women and girls around the world being trafficked and being sexually abused. So how cool is that? You know, how much like rejoicing can come just in this room as we find freedom to know that girls aren't being abused and money isn't flowing into the hands of those who are pimping women and those who are trafficking women because of the freedom we found in Jesus. So, yeah, my desire is not to heap guilt onto you, but instead just to heap joy onto you. A lot of times in the past, you know, people have, at least in the nonprofit realm, you know, the realm that I work in, some nonprofits have been known to try to motivate people out of guilt. And one kind of classic example of this is like an infomercial with a kind of a starving baby who has a bloated belly and flies like flying around their face. And there's someone standing next to them saying, if you were to just give $1 a day, this person's life could be forever changed. And that is very true. But I would say that to that individual, it's not dignifying. And I just believe that everything that we do should bring dignity to individuals. You know, in no way would they be proud that like their whole life is summed up and they're depicted to the world as this person who is starving to death and has flies flying around their face. And so, yeah, what if we could just bring dignity to people while we actually help them? What a crazy concept. And not just actually manipulate people's emotions to try to get money to do ministry. Oh, man. And so I believe that Jesus didn't motivate that way. I believe that He didn't motivate based on guilt. He motivated out of joy. You know, I love this quote that He has that Paul said in Acts 20:35. He says, it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. And so Jesus invited us into the best possible way of living, where it's more blessed to give than it is to receive, to live this life of self-sacrifice for the benefit of others, a life of love, you know, through His power. And I love, one of my favorite verses is 1 John 3:16. And it says, the only reason why we know what love is that Jesus Christ laid His life down for us. And we are then allowed to enter into this life of laying our lives down for other people. And that form of motivation is a sustainable one. Because again, it's not rooted in our own strength. It's not rooted in someone feeling guilty. And the thing is, like, not too many people that I know actually watch those infomercials. You know, most of the time, probably, if you guys have seen those, you probably changed the channel right away. Didn't want to watch them. And maybe you felt guilty and you're like, holy cow, my life is like way different or way better than their life. And I feel guilty living, continually living the way that I do. And so I'm going to ease my conscience. And sure, I'll write a check and give it to them, but just to be able to justify my ability to continue to live the way that I do. And so, in no way is it a sustainable form of actually bringing change to the world. But Jesus, when we're empowered by his example of laying his life down, I love this quote, it said, you know, Jesus didn't come and die so that we don't have to. He actually came and died so that we would know how. How crazy is that? And just like that we get to, like Peter says, we can participate in the divine nature. You know, the Holy Spirit has given us everything that we need to live a godly life in Christ Jesus, it says. And he invites us to participate in the divine nature, which is ultimately a nature of humbling yourself and lowering yourself to the point of sacrificing things and even your own comfort for the benefit of someone else. The divine nature is essentially one of love. I just love how that is an incredibly courageous and an incredibly honoring way of living, you know? And so, man, I would just challenge you guys to view, like, this way of life in terms of, like, okay, we're existing, and we look at this world sometimes as, like, okay, this world kind of exists just to make me feel a certain way. And so we are just a consumer. And many times we look at the church in this way. Okay, I'm just going to go to church, and they need to make me kind of feel a certain way, and I need to get refreshed so that I can go and, like, live life. But I would just say that that's a very, like, empty way of living. And that's a... not the way that Jesus created us to live. He created us to be contributors, you know, as we live through the power of him pouring his love through us into the world. And so just looking in terms, what if we waked up every day and said, you know what, how can I how can I help someone today? How can I serve someone today? How can I show them that they are loved by the creator of the universe, you know? Like, what is it that I could do for someone who's maybe going through a hard time? Like, what kind of incredible mission would that be that we would get to live every single day? Like, I got to buy groceries for someone who was having a hard time feeding their family, just left them on the door and knocked, and then ran away and just got to see them, like, open the door, you know? Like, this is great! You know, like, what kind of adventure would that be to be able to live that every single day, just randomly, like, and creatively meeting the needs of those who are suffering in the world and just living a life of contribution through the power of Jesus? I love that. I just feel like, okay, I think one of the biggest lies that we believe sometimes as Christians is that we look at this word called sanctification, right? And we're like, okay, sanctification is becoming more like Jesus. And so we think, like, this is a process, you know? That's kind of the word that we can sometimes give it. And, like, it's a process of doing more and more of, like, what Jesus does or what he did. And it's doing less and less of what he didn't do, right? And so we find ourselves like, okay, maybe we'll be like, okay, I'm doing that well. What am I not doing so well? And I think in the Christian faith, in churches, we can tend to find ourselves just being caught up in this perpetual cycle of, like, introspection. Mm-hmm. Oh. Which, like, it just kind of crushes me because it prevents us from being able to live this life of service. And so we analyze ourselves and focus on, like, okay, I'm not doing this so well. And so we just, like, focus on, like, all of our inadequacies and all of our deficiencies. And all the ways that we're not like Jesus. And all the things that we think we need to do or not do to be more like him. And we find ourselves just, like, beating ourselves up all the time. But what if it's not at all really about what we do and don't do, and it's really just about what Jesus has already done on the cross?
That's right.
And it's not about, like, maybe what we are trying to get away from and be set free from, but it's about what we're saved to instead. We get to take our eyes off of behind us, and we get to live forward into what this divine nature looks like. So I'll just leave you with kind of two more verses, two more ideas. One would be found in Galatians 3. And it just says the purpose of the law is to point us to Jesus. And so we see all of these things in Scripture, all these things that we're commanded to do, right? One of the ways that we fall into this trap of introspection. Okay, I'm called to do this. I'm called to do this. Okay, as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, like Jesus says, if you love me, you will obey me. And so I got to do all these things, right? But the beautiful thing is that the purpose of the law, so one of these laws in Ephesians 5, it says there should be no sexual immorality among you, not even a hint. So it's like, wow, man, that's kind of intense. Like, okay, I'm going to try to obey this command, this law. And as I found, the more and more I tried, the more and more I just saw how much of a failure I was. right? How sucky is that? Like, come on, Jesus, like, what the heck? But if it took me to this place where I broke and said, Jesus, I can't do this without you. I need you. Please come and save me. So the purpose of the law is to point us to Jesus. And how cool is it that we can look at every command in the Bible and be like, I'm going to try to do that. Not because I need to in order to like be worthy of going to heaven and spending eternity with Jesus, but because as I see how like miserable I fail, I get to see how much I need Jesus to come and set me free and rescue me. Like, oh, how crazy is that? Okay, I'm just going to leave you guys one more verse. It's in Matthew 5:8, and Jesus, he just says, you know, it's a pure in heart that will see God. How beautiful is that? Guys, we get to find freedom in Jesus from something like looking at pornography. Again, not that we're just trying to be saved from things and get away from things and stop doing things, but what are we saved to? Let's change our view and not just look at the things that we had to make us feel embarrassed or make us feel ashamed and just perpetuates this cycle of kind of pity. Jesus, I can't do this. Like, man, why don't you just like make me stop feeling these ways, you know, and like take these things away from me. But instead we just turn our eyes and say, oh man, I get to see more and more of Jesus as a result of this. And as he purifies my heart, I just get to see more and more of God. Like, how beautiful is that? So I just want to leave you with that thought. And just encourage you guys to know that the result of freedom is that we just get to see Jesus more clearly. Which is one of the coolest things ever. And so again, let me just pray. But before I do, I do just desire to kind of just ask you guys, you know, if you would have the courage, like, in this moment, just to, like, raise your hand if something like freedom from pornography is something that you really desire. And just as a result of coming here and hearing this and just seeing this hope in Jesus, that is something that you just want to begin to cry out for. And, like, yeah, just true freedom in your hearts is something that maybe you never thought was a possibility, but just through him you're seeing that it is. And so I would just ask you guys to raise your hand. I want to pray over you guys. So just throw your hands up if that's something you really want. Awesome.
I have a question / comment also.
Cool. Could I pray real quick first?
Yeah.
And then we'll go into some questions. Awesome. No worries. Sweet. Jesus, again, man, we are so honored that we get to live a life that brings glory to the creator and lover of each one of our souls. Man, just powerful. What a beautiful concept. Jesus, I, again, just ask for your spirit to blow into this room, God. I pray that it would move with might and that each individual heart that raised their hand would just feel your presence, God, intimately and close to them. Jesus, I pray that they would just find this new sense of courage, knowing that it's not just based on their performance, it's not just based on their strength in order to try harder to stop looking at pornography for longer, but it's based on you just being the supernatural God that you are and bringing supernatural healing into our hearts, which is something that we cannot do without you. Jesus, so I do pray specifically for freedom of these men's hearts. God, I pray that they would just see that there's no condemnation for those who are in Jesus. And I just thank you again so much for this incredible opportunity to be able to spend time with them. And I thank you for the courage that they have to enter into this room, just even put one foot into it after hearing what it was about. And I just thank you again just for what that shows about their hearts and what that shows about these men here. And I just pray that this moment, that this day, man, that they would just be able to look back at this day and say, that's the day that Jesus radically set me free and my life changed forever. And I'm just so grateful, yeah, that you, sure, you don't promise that it will always be easy, but you do promise that we never have to do it alone. And so I just pray that they would feel your presence just in a way that they never have before from this day forward. And I pray all these things in your name. Amen. All right. Well, I believe it goes till 3:15 or 3:10 or 3:15. Cool. Well, yeah, if you guys want to hang out, just ask some questions about what we just talked about. We can have a little discussion or about when the saints, just whatever you might be interested in. This guy had one first. Let me get to him.
Actually, I'm still formulating it.
Okay, cool. No worries.
You made me wait.
Sweet. Yeah.
What got you started in standing before the men like this? Not just because of going to Africa, but just yourself opening up yourself like this.
That's a great question. In 2009, our church did a 3-week series on fasting, and I'd never heard a teaching on fasting before. It was just something that I thought no one really did anymore. And they just showed us all the scriptures that call us to fast, and all the spiritual benefits that come as a result. And we were just encouraged to do some form of a fast, whether it was like not eating meat, you know, for 3 weeks, or maybe like not eating lunch or something. And there was a small group of people who actually decided they would do like a full-on fast and not eat any like solid food and just drink liquid. And so I don't like to tend to like kind of halfway do something. I like to jump in with both feet. And so I was like, dude, I'm going to give this a shot. Like, again, the purpose of the law is the point of Jesus. So if I fail, like, I just get to see my need for Jesus. And so I was like, all right, like, let's go for it. Let's do this. And there was a couple of us who went 21 days without taking a bite of food. And it was just one of the, you know, most powerful things that I ever got to experience. The last night, I was planning on going to bed at about 9 o'clock at night so I could get up at like 4 a.m. and start eating again, you know. And I was on the 18th day, I was reading through Luke chapters 5 and 6, and he was talking about how in 5 it said that Jesus often went to lonely places and prayed. And then in chapter 6, it said that the night before he chose the 12 disciples, he stayed up all night and just spent time with God and prayed. And I was like, oh, like that's intense, like all night. And I felt like Jesus kind of whispered to me, and he was like, David, do you really want to do the easiest possible thing at the end of this time that you've committed to be? You know, is that what it's all about, just getting out of the discomfort as fast as possible? He said, what if instead you just spent all night with me? And so on the 21st night, I went down to my basement at 12:30 at night, and I stayed there till 6 a.m. and just did a series of like reading scripture and praying and then journaling. And I just started the whole night with a bunch of questions that I had that I journaled, just saying like, God, mostly they kind of revolved around like, what is the purpose that you created me for? And I was 21 at the time. Throughout the course of that night, there was just a very elaborate way that he, I believe, directly communicated to me that he created me for two things. One, to help girls who have been forced into prostitution and are being perpetually sexually abused. And the second one, he said, was to actually disciple and mentor men. So this one made a lot of sense to me because, again, I felt like a burden to men. Most of my friends were girls, and I was just like, yeah, that would be great. Like, do counseling, and not that I would do it personally, but that, you know, this home would just facilitate Africans to be able to minister to other Africans. We could just empower them to do that. I was like, I could totally get on board with that. The whole men thing I didn't get for just about maybe a year and a half ago I kind of started. So a couple years later, for a while I was like, okay, maybe we'll just like come back to that one later. And so now in the last year and a half we started to learn kind of what I explained about how the true sustainable change of this injustice comes, you know, and is found in the hearts of men. And so he just started showing me that my personal role in eradicating the injustice of sexual violence is just to get like spend time with dudes and hang out with them and mentor them. And especially in Malawi, just culturally, sexual violence is almost accepted in the way that it's just never talked about and everyone does it. And so it's just allowed, maybe not accepted, it's allowed to take place. And one of the many reasons for that is that half the population of 15 million people is 15 years old or under. And so things like HIV/AIDS and malaria and, you know, accidents, things like that, cause a lot of death. And so I've read the average life expectancy at birth being around 38 of Malawi. And so just that all these young dudes are growing up without any kind of examples and mentors. And so they've never really been shown what a healthy relationship between a man and a woman looks like. And so just to come alongside of them and say, hey, you know, in the Bible, this is what it talks about. You know, we are called to actually treat women with absolute purity, you know, like Timothy tells us, and this is what that looks like. And just to come alongside of them, you know, for many of them, they're almost unknowingly doing the only thing that they know, kind of, in the abusive women. And so, yeah, ultimately, Jesus whispered one night in 2009 in January, the same year that, just a couple of days later, I found freedom from looking at pornography and masturbation. But yeah, Jesus whispered and radically changed the course of my whole life. And everything that I'm doing with When the Saints is a result of him whispering in a moment.
Definitely see the joy of the Lord in your face.
Yeah. Thanks. You got yours?
Thanks. Just take it as you will, because I'm kind of formulating it as I go. I've really spent a lot of time focusing on the why of, I'm going to speak personally, the why of why I watch porn, and been through a few classes, and you know, done some digging in books and in the spirit, and so I feel like I got a halfway decent grasp on the why, you know, the personal brokenness, the lack of affection, Father, the numbness that it gives me from the pain that I live in, from the other things, you know, kind of like you were saying, a drug. So okay, I'm here, I'm there with that, and then I'm going to speak objectively about your class. And I've also heard a lot, because you hear that in the church, the porn industry is huge, that comes from the pulpit a lot. You know, we shouldn't be doing this, and then there's the Second Timothy thing, and I'm all for that. That's great, that's a great goal. You know, but I'm for me, it's where is the in-between? I guess I need help with the rough stuff, the steps from this is why it started and this is why you are the way you are. Because I promise you, I'm not the only man in the room or in my church that absolutely despises themselves after they get done ejaculating in front of a stupid computer screen after objectifying women in their hearts and they know they're wrong. You know what I'm saying? I'm not the only person that feels like that and can't stop.
Keep coming, brother.
And it's what I want to see, and you have helped me a lot, but I'm trying to think as you and I, and maybe other people in here, are spirit-filled believers. I see the spirit in your eyes, and the Bible says deep cries out to deep, so I hear what you're saying. But there are people who are caught in this that are not, where you and I are, where some of the other gentlemen in this room are. And so my question is, how can I, because I'm not there yet, I'm doing really well through Jesus' help, how do I get there for one and then turn around and go, you know, it's bad, this is why you're doing it, and this is what's going to happen if we keep doing it, and this is how it hurts the women. But those things don't change people, you know what I'm saying? They're good things, but they're not radically changing people's lives from porn addicts to free men in Jesus Christ. So what I'm looking for in my own head and in a ministry, maybe possibly, is let's get the steps. Let's get to you're at home at 10:45 at night and you're checking your email or you're playing video games or you're doing something on the internet and there's that thought. You know, where's your accountability partners then? Where's the pastor then? You know, he's not standing next to you going, you know, that's where I think people and I, that's where I need to be empowered. Because that's, you know, no one's around. No one can see me. In 30 seconds, I can have any kind of pornography I want on my telephone. Anything I can think of. I can... You know what I mean? How are we going to fight back? Satan's got us by the balls, so to speak, within the world. But my Jesus says that I'm free, so I want to fight back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just need help.
Yeah.
And so that would be my question. If you have any thoughts or maybe just something you could think about.
Yeah, I'll throw a couple of thoughts out there.
And add 3 a.m. in the morning, too.
Right, you know.
Totally.
You're not going to call up your accountability partner at 3 in the morning when you're tempted.
Yeah, totally.
You're going to fight the temptation all alone.
Right.
It's hard for me to call anyone. I mean, you know, it's so hard for a man to talk to another man about that. I have a best friend, but it would be very difficult for me to call him and go, man, dude, I'm so horny, I can't even think right now. I can't even have the blanket on me. You know,
right.
Let's talk real. Help is what I'm saying.
Yeah, totally. I think there's a couple things where we can start before we even get to having an accountability partner. And one would be just asking God to help you understand that looking at pornography and masturbating and this pleasure that you get and the thing that you think that like this provides, this satisfaction, it's not like a need that we have like food. You know, it's not something that if we go longer and longer, we're going to get more and more miserable and eventually like die. It's actually the opposite, you know. And so literally, I had to convince myself by telling myself over and over again, like, Jesus, like, help me believe that this isn't something that I need. Because I'll feed that thought, like, it totally just comes, like, one little thought, like, oh, I could do that. And it's like, not even, it's this fleeting thing that, like, oh, and then it grows. And, like, if you allow it to be fed, you're like, yeah, I could do that. And then I could do that. And, like, oh, I'm not really doing anything, like, during this time. And, like, it just grows and grows. But it starts with that one little thing. And so just beginning, like, to help, like, believe in your heart that, like, this is not something that I need. And the more and more I think about it, this is not something that, again, like, I've gone, you know, 4 years and, like, years on end without looking at pornography. And so it's not something that is a basic necessity. Then I would say another thing is I believe that, kind of like what you were saying, us doing this is a form of like self-hatred, and it's like condemnation, and it's like, man, I don't really know if I want to like even meet up with an accountability partner and just like tell them that I failed. And like, and so it's just like, again, the kind of that outward pressure that we feel of like inadequacy and just like all these like I'm a failure, and so we run to this to try to just push that back. Another thing that we can just begin by crying out to Jesus is like, Jesus, help me see myself the way that you see me, you know? Mm-hmm. Help me see myself in terms of like me not being condemned, me not, you know, like being unworthy of your love, being unworthy of your forgiveness. Like, I think that all sin and all addiction is rooted in fear. You know, it's rooted in anxiety of like, oh, if I don't do this, like something bad might happen. And like all these lies that we believe that aren't true. And ultimately, like, these fears that we have about whether we will or won't be loved. And so I just love how 1 John says, perfect love casts out fear. And so when we understand that Jesus loves us perfectly, and that we don't have to hate ourselves when we do something that we think makes us unworthy of Jesus' love, I think that liberates us so much, you know, and it frees us from this pressure that causes us to sin, which is rooted in fear. So just seeing yourself the way that Jesus sees you and asking him to help you understand those elements of the gospel. I would say one thing also about accountability partners, because I think if you have one, which is awesome, I wouldn't at all, you know, say that we shouldn't do something like have an accountability partner. But if it is just kind of rooted in like you guys getting together and being like, okay, you know, how many times did you look at it this time? And like, okay, like, don't do that again. You know, like, there's no freedom in that. Right. There's no encouragement. There's no joy. So just setting the precedent of someone that you might be, maybe your best friend, someone you might be like, I want to meet with you once a week and just talk about this. And, like, just the idea of accountability is not something that I believe we're ever really meant to play, you know, as a role toward other people. It's like, hey, you shouldn't be doing that. Like, that's just not our job. Like, our job is just to get to love, you know, people. And so just set this precedent of, like, let's just encourage one another, you know, and not necessarily just focus on the ways that we maybe failed, but just, you know, focus on what freedom would look like and focus on the joys and focus on the benefits and just kind of change our perspective, but setting that precedent in the meeting. I just want to go back and make that one point about hatred, you know, that we have toward ourselves and how it causes us to do this, because one thing that's incredibly difficult, you know, entering into this mentorship relationship with someone who's actively, like, raping teenage girls in Malawi. You know, it's obviously, like, I know dozens of men that would say, I would put a cap in that dude's head, you know, I would kill that guy if I knew that he was raping these girls. And, like, there's this crazy, crazy quote by this guy named O. Henry, I believe is his name, and he says, if we could see the secret, like, hidden past of even our worst enemies, it would unveil enough, like, abuse and kind of pain that would diffuse even our worst hostilities. And just seeing that, like, our actions have, like you're saying, they have this root, you know, something maybe happened to us. I don't necessarily believe in, like, a counseling type of, like, let's really explore this and find out why you're doing this. I don't really think the freedom comes there. Again, like, looking back, I believe that freedom comes through Jesus by looking forward. But I do see value in understanding kind of the solution of some of this fear that we have, so that Jesus can then bring us. But I think it can be to a fault where we just overanalyze that and get paralyzed and kind of get this maybe victim mentality of all these things were done to me, and so I need something else to be done to me, you know, not, you know, by someone. I need this person who did this to me to come and apologize. Like, our freedom is not dependent on what other people do or do not do to us. And so I do see a fault in that, but I do see value in that as well. And so, yeah, just entering into a relation with a guy who's actively sleeping with a teenage girl and loving them, again, asking us to give us Jesus' eyes, you know, asking Jesus, I mean, to give us Jesus' eyes that he has for them. Because I'll finish with this and then try to get another question or two. They are just, like, these men and us, like, we're just as enslaved, even as the very people that they are enslaving in a brothel. Yep. Like, they're no less in need of Jesus. We are all on an equal playing field in our need for a Savior. No one is any more or no one is any less in need of Jesus to rescue them. And so just seeing them in terms of, this person needs, you know, to put his hope in Jesus, or they will spend eternity apart from the creator and lover of their souls, you know? And so just loving them in that and loving yourself in that, like, wow, Jesus saw me worthy that he would lay his life down for me. Like, I may not understand that. I may not believe that about myself, but hey, he did it. And so it has value. He apparently saw something in me that I don't right now. And like, I need his eyes for me and I need his eyes for other people. And that allows us to participate in that divine nature. So, yeah.
Accountability partner is not supposed to be someone that judges you.
Right.
It's supposed to be someone you can share openly.
Yeah.
And know it's confidential.
Totally.
Between the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not where it's going to hold you to a record.
And make you feel horrible.
But it's hard to.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about men sharpen iron. Steel sharpens steel, men sharpen men.
Uh-huh.
And if we don't have that, which most of my life I've never had, and it's been hard to get rid of the things that's been holding me back spiritually.
Mm.
Because you can't share it with a pastor, who are you going to share it with?
Yeah.
Definitely not something you're going to share with your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Not until God brings you to that point.
Yeah.
We talked so much about the girls, but we didn't mention that the boys are being stolen and used as much in the human trafficking almost now as the girls.
Right. Yeah.
And we celebrate Super Bowl, and that's the first Sunday that any city has to deal with.
Yeah.
And I tried to push my pastor into bringing up Horn Sunday this year, but he was just new. He didn't want to get fired the first time. He said, talk to me about it for next year.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't address the boys and, you know, the men, right? That's not specifically what we've been called into as a ministry, but that definitely happens in the world. So, yeah.
I just feel very strongly that I want to share just this immediate, you know, last, you know, today update to my testimony that's gone. Spans many years here. I've been struggling with violence and anger and sex addiction, and I got to the root of. I went to a CR chapter here. Three men who are immediate accountability partners to me, who've been in that chapter, are in this building today, and it's. And I can say that is actually an answer to the question down there. That is actually a fantastic place. Very safe place, Christ-centered place to unpack that stuff in kind of a counseling environment. It is a place where I got completely pushed through with Christ by my side, with scriptural basis, a lot of those struggles. And it's also a place where I encountered, as I peeled back layers of the onion of my problems, if you will, you know, to the point where I found pornography and have since even gone past that. I never got free in that environment completely of my sex addictions. And I spent a long time talking with the youngest of my two younger brothers last night until about 1 in the morning, and I called him last minute to invite him. I forgot to invite him. I come to ISI pretty often, and I said, hey, I just asked him for prayer. We started talking, and I just had one of those deep, you know, I've got a really great connection with my brothers, and he was asking me for some help with stuff. He looks up to me on a lot of these things. He knows I've delved deeply into this, and I said, hey, you should know I don't have freedom from this yet. I'm praying for that right now. Please pray that I break through every session I've been in today. Maybe it's because, you know, in 6 ISIs I think I've been to this time, I'm ready to receive this stuff and be free forever. And I'm so glad I was led to your session. I thank you for being transparent and owning your joy, which I know you can't help but do, and sharing your joy, which I know you can't help but do. And it's met me in a place where I'm ready to be free of this, and it's going to happen.
Come on.
I feel it in the depths of my spirit. Mm. So I just wanted to say that it is a great environment, and what's great about my accountability relationships is the one key thing that counts is that we are confessors for each other. We remind each other that we're forgiven. Yeah. That's the one thing.
That's good.
Come on. The enemy, and he can't hold us down with that guilt. You know?
Yeah, totally.
That's what counts.
I like that.
Yep. But thank you so much.
Whoa. Okay, cool. Well, I just wanted to say there's a couple brochures for when the Saints, if you were curious about the ministry that we do. I got some business cards if you wanted to get in touch. We have some t-shirts at our booth, and yeah, just check out the website. It's whenthesaints.com. And thank you guys so much for coming.
Can I have a business card?
Totally.